Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we open with our newsmaker interviews on a very important topic, the detention of over 20 Chaldean Christians who have sought asylum in the United States after fleeing genocide in Iraq. We'll be speaking today with Mark Arabo on his efforts to try and win freedom for these detainees who have been in the ICE detention facility at Otay Mesa here for months. We'll also be talking with Amir Moshi, who has two relatives inside the ICE detention prison, and will have some disturbing updates on the fate of several detainees there. Later, we'll tell you about some more journalism awards that we've won here at East County Magazine for our reporting in the public interest on stories that matter. Then on our Green Scene Report, hear about San Diego's ambitious climate action plan. We'll also have news today about a court ruling to grant new rights to juveniles in the juvenile justice system. And we'll tell you about a statewide ban on bobcat trapping that's just been announced. On our Capitol Report, we'll have the latest on the Planned Parenthood controversy in Congress. And then in part three of our Presidential Race for the White House Rose Garden series, we'll be profiling two Latino candidates in the Republican primary, Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. Then on Destination East County, hear about some exciting events coming up across our region, from a Native American flute circle to the Julian Film Festival and much, much more. With wildfires raging across the state and firefighting resources spread thin in some areas, we have some tips today from our own in-house fire chief, Sam DiGiovanna, on what you should know if you ever need to evacuate during a wildfire. We'll also have news about a court ruling to block San Diego State's plans to expand housing for students and faculty. Then from Public News Service, we'll have some top news stories from across the nation. Plus, hear why the sister of James DiMaggio, who kidnapped Lakeside teenager Hannah Anderson, has filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the FBI. We'll have all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, I have two very special guests with me, Mark Arabo, who is a national spokesperson for the Iraqi Chaldean Christians in America, and Amir Moshi. He was a translator for the U.S. Army, the U.S. military in Iraq during the war, and now he has two of his cousins who are detained in the Otay Mesa detention facility after trying to flee ISIS and come here to America. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Now, listeners, if you missed our show on Monday, we covered the rally that local Chaldean Christians held outside the ICE detention facility, Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention facility in Otay Mesa, where 21 Chaldeans are imprisoned currently who've tried to come here and seek asylum. Mark, since the rally, have you had any updates on what's happened? How long have these people been there, and is there any progress in sight?
We're keeping the pressure on. We've contacted our local delegates. Families are not speaking as much as before because they've told us that the folks at ICE have told them to stop talking to people in the media, because if they do, it will prolong their case.
And really? So wait, so they're being threatened and intimidated by ICE, by our own customs enforcement people? They're telling them that they can't speak out to the media?
From what we understand of what from the families have told us, they are being told not to speak to the media, and we feel like ICE is stonewalling. They're not answering our questions, every time we get a family to say they can speak on our behalf, ICE is giving a roundabout excuse as if they don't have enough resources to do their job. We're feeling that they're irritated that we're speaking about this injustice because, like Dr. Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. We need all your listeners to join us and join our journey to help free these Christians.
These people are, let's be very clear here, they are victims of genocide, and at least 20 of the 21, you've told us, have family here who will vouch for their identities. There's no question that these might be terrorists coming in or something like that. These are Christians with family right here who've been here in most cases for many, many years. Have you spoken with the ACLU or Amnesty International?
We're talking to the ACLU and other human rights organizations. We're going to reach out to Amnesty International this upcoming week. Just like you said, these are folks that escaped a Christian genocide, a Christian Holocaust. They escaped ISIS slavery and death, mm-hmm. only to be imprisoned by ICE. And it's shameful. They should be released immediately. They have family members in San Diego. They have a job waiting for them. They have a home waiting for them.
Yeah, there was actually a court case back in 2012, right here out of San Diego, where a federal judge had ruled that you can't have indefinite detention of people who are seeking asylum, that you're supposed to be, you know, letting them out right away if there's no threat, and that you certainly can't keep them more than, say, 6 months without a bond hearing, no matter how backlogged you are. And yet some of these people have been here longer than that with no bond hearing. Amir, tell me about the relatives that you have here. First of all, who are they? What are their ages? What can you tell us about them?
My second cousin named Ziad Mati, 25 years old. He arrived to the United States in January 2015.
So he's been here 7 months now in this facility.
Yeah, they usually hold them for like a couple of weeks and get released. But recently, they've been like more than 6 months. They should be released 2 weeks after their arrival. And they should be sent to a court, and the judge will decide either they stay or not. But this time is totally different. And I tried to ask him what's going on with his case, and he told me he can't give me a lot of information because someone told him to tell the media not to talk to the media a lot.
Wow. So they're clearly being intimidated. How are they being treated as far as, are they getting enough food, water? Have you heard any stories of any kind of physical or verbal abuse of detainees?
He was telling me the food is of bad quality, and the officers were very disrespectful to them. He told me a story of an old man, about 65 years old. He waved to his daughter. She'd been detained over there, and he got yelled by an officer for 15 minutes nonstop until that guy started crying. So they're being yelled at. Their environment in jail is really bad quality.
So it sounds like some verbally
And they
abused.
Are very tired and stressed. They just want to find something to do so they can get released. Even they try to hire more lawyers, but for some reason they've been not getting a lot of help.
Now, when they came to this country, I understand that there were some issues of identification. Tell me what it takes to get out of Iraq. First of all, what were the specific circumstances for your relatives when they fled? What was happening that was so dire that they felt they needed to leave their homeland and do whatever it took to get to America?
It's very obvious. They are Christians. They believe in Jesus Christ. And ISIS and other Islamic terrorist group doesn't like to see this minority living in Iraq anymore. And a lot of Christians stayed and tried to live in Iraq, but they got killed. And you can see that in the media. They got abused. They had also been sold to another country as a sex slavery. My cousin were smart enough. They made a decision to leave right before ISIS arrived to their village. And I'm really happy to see them leaving the country before ISIS got to their village.
So did they go to, Syria or Turkey? Where was their first stop?
They went from North Iraq to Turkey, because that's the closest country to them. Mm-hmm. From Turkey, Istanbul, went to Mexico. From Mexico, landed in Tijuana by California border. And and they didn't try to run away from the law enforcement. They stopped by the checkpoints where Americans officers there and told them, we are here to apply for asylum. We're from Iraq. Okay, they were so peaceful to the country.
They were very honest. They didn't try to sneak across the border or anything. That said, I understand that your relatives, like most, if not all of them that came here recently, because there is no processing of papers, there is no refugee processing going on in Iraq right now, largely because it's so dangerous even for the personnel that would have to go do that there. So the only way to come here is to do it essentially illegally, to pay a smuggler to bring them here. And what happens when someone asks a smuggler to help them get here? What happens to their passport, to their identification?
Well, one thing that, and you hit it on the point, Miriam, there is no processing that's legal in Iraq. These folks have three choices: convert, get killed, death by the sword, or flee. There's no safe haven in Iraq. There's no safe zone. And so a lot of their passports were actually taken away from ISIS or their neighbors that gave them up to ISIS. And in the absence of Congress's leadership and the president's leadership, we're leading and building this underground railroad where we're extracting Christians one by one through a network of nations, five or six countries, to finally make it to America, to reunite with their families.
So it was hoped.
You know, and we've been very vocal on this. You know, the symbol of America is the Statue of Liberty. It's not a gated fence.
Right.
And the Statue of Liberty, when my parents came in 1979, they read that beautiful inscription: "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free."
Yeah.
And this is a very important moment for San Diego, for America. And ICE is failing. They are stonewalling, and they're imprisoning people that have escaped a Christian Holocaust. It's shameful. And it reminds me of 1939 when the M.S. Lewis came to Florida with 900 Jewish Holocaust survivors. We turned them away and they died.
A similar thing happened to a relative of mine who had to go to South America, actually, because the U.S. would not let her in. She was Jewish and she was escaping the concentration camps of the rest of her family was sent and died in the concentration camps in Europe. So you're right. There are some very similar parallels, although eventually her daughter was able to emigrate here legally and come here. But these people have nowhere else to go right now. There is no safe haven in the world, really, for them. Their papers, even if they manage to hang on to a passport when they fled ISIS, the smugglers, I understand, take them and burn them and give them new identifications because you can't get out of some of these countries. Is that correct, Amir?
I want to add more information.
Yeah.
If you look at Iraqi government right now, it's unstable. It's upside down. We don't even have a government right now. Our president in Iraq can't even solve anything right now. It's all problems everywhere. Look at the Iraqi population right now. They're on the street, millions of them, today in this moment. Even the Muslim themselves, the good one, they're trying to have life. They can't.
Yeah.
And they want us to go to a passport department and apply for a new passport. You know what's going to happen to us if we show our identification? Look at our names. Most of our names are Christians and Jewish names. We go there and then we will show to the passport department our identification. 5 minutes later, we'll be followed by a terrorist or a militia or a gangster.
And they would be killed.
God knows what's going to happen to us.
Wow.
Most of us didn't go to passport department just because we are afraid to show our identification.
Yeah.
It shows we are Christians right away by our look or by our names.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Homeland Security isn't here. ICE isn't here. They clearly have a duty to make sure people coming into this country aren't terrorists. But this is not a situation of someone just showing up and saying, hey, trust me, let me in. These are people that have relatives here who know who they are, who vouch for them. In the case of the Chaldeans, they're Christians. So these would seem to be about the most unlikely people to be potential terrorists of anybody that you could find. And they gave themselves up voluntarily. They didn't sneak in.
And that's a really important point right there. These aren't folks that try to evade law enforcement.
Yeah.
They went straight to the border and said, I am a survivor of a genocide. I love America. Thank you for saving my life. What do I do next? They're following all the protocol. They weren't trying to sneak in here. They weren't just walking across. They followed all the protocol only to be imprisoned and detained and picked on and treated unfairly. And it shows really how broken our immigration system is. But our local delegates need to do more.
Yeah.
And right now, the Congress is on vacation while these innocent people, innocent 20 Christians, are being detained for no reason.
We have reached out to some of our members of Congress, and thus far we've heard back from one of them. Congresswoman Susan Davis denounced the broken immigration system. She indicated that her office is very interested in looking into this and finding out more, but when she contacted ICE, they wouldn't give her any information because they cited privacy concerns. They said, unless you can get a detainee to sign a release form, the congressional member, can't get information about that. So that said, I got a copy of the form, the release form, and to anyone listening out there, if you have family that's detained in there, or you have access to these people, you're an immigration lawyer, if you can get them to sign a media release, we can help them publicize their information if they want it publicized, and or get the information to Congresswoman Susan Davis's office so that she can presumably look into this. Now, we do have some troubling updates from our Monday report. ICE has gotten back to us. They have confirmed that there are currently 28 Iraqi detainees at the Otay facility. We know that at least 21 of them are Chaldean. We don't know about the other seven, and they will not release, you know, religion. So we don't know if the others are Islamic or Chaldean or what. But of the 21 Chaldeans, it's interesting, Mark, that you said they're being threatened not to speak to the media because it'll make things worse for them. Because out of the 21 Chaldeans, the only one where the family hasn't contacted you or in some way been in touch with either yourself or media, the only one is a woman named Richa Morogi, who has also gone by the name Zina Horns Raha Deli, and she has been criminally charged as of yesterday. We found out she is a Chaldean woman. We know this because we did a public records request. Once they're criminally charged, we get the records, ironically. Until then, if they're innocent, we can't get any information on them. And what she's being charged with is giving false information to immigration officials. Basically, she'd went through a number of countries before she came here. One of them was Germany, and she didn't tell them that she'd been in Germany. So for this, she's treated like a criminal.
We've also just learned that five other Iraqi detainees at Otay have just been ordered deported, and we don't know if those ordered deported are additional Chaldeans that your group didn't know about, or if they are Muslim or some other group.
I don't know why the others have been ordered deported, but do you find this troubling, and what would you like to say to what's going on here?
It's very troubling. We want to give hope to the not only the Chaldean 20 and that are being detained that reached out to us, mm-hmm. but to show that the folks that we're advocating for have not been charged with anything. And what they're charging Rita with, based on her not saying that she went to Germany first before she came to America, based on the fact that you can't process out of Iraq directly, and she left everything she has in Iraq. Not because she wanted to, because she would be killed if she were to stay. And in the absence of our leadership as a country in that region for religious minorities, she had no other option but to come to America, reuniting with her families. And the heartbreaking story we heard last week at our prayer service outside the center was her dream was to reunite with her family, with her mother. And the day we did that prayer service, they found out that her mother died at Grossmont Hospital. No, I believe it's Rita.
Oh my goodness.
That's what Amr was, they contacted him after.
So not only did she come here pleading to be let out to see her mother, and her mother died at Grossmont Hospital the day your rally was held last Thursday, and the second that happens, instead of being compassionate and letting her out to be with whatever other family she may have, they turn around and they charge her with a crime. I don't know what happens, by the way. I've asked that when you're charged with a crime. Does that mean you're deported? Does that mean you're now in prison for even longer here, or exactly what that means? So we're trying to find that out. But it certainly seems very uncompassionate at the very least.
And you know one thing? I really want to thank East County Magazine and your media, because your listeners have been amazing. They've reached out to us offering homes for these people.
Wow.
Offering prayer services, offering support.
That's very good to hear.
And we need every American to raise their voice with our voice and pressure our members of Congress and ICE to do the right thing, to do the American thing. And that is to once and for all release these victims of genocide.
Amir, do you have some additional thoughts to share?
Have a small sentence I want to add. I want to ask the American government to look at Iraq government. If Iraq government can stable the country, if Iraq was stable, Rida and other Chaldeans will not be here in America. They will be living in Iraq peacefully. But just because there is no way, and we can't even live in Iraq for 1 second, not even a minute, second. We are in a situation where we don't have a country, and we feel now America is our country. So I hope they get released, and I hope they will be getting helped, and I'm pretty sure their families here will sponsor them. They will help them financially, and they will get them settled down here in San Diego.
I also spoke with Father Noel this morning from the Catholic Church, the St. Peter's Cathedral, which serves the Chaldean community here in El Cajon in East County. He was supposed to join us today and wasn't able to, but he said that what Rina is charged with should not be a crime, that they're treating, you know, innocent victims like criminals here. And he believes that that's morally wrong.
We wholeheartedly agree with Father Noel, and like to add that prior to 2003 invasion of Iraq, prior to 2003, there was 1.4 million Christians in Iraq. Fast forward 12 years later, there's less than 250,000.
Wow.
So a lot of the protections for religious minorities went out the door when the invasion happened. So we have a moral responsibility and obligation to these folks. And like Colin Powell said, if we broke it, we own it. And we broke it for religious minorities. So we need to do the right thing now and just accept them to our country.
What are the next steps to try to get some justice here for these folks?
We are planning on more rallies and prayer services. We're going to mobilize as many people as we can. We need everyone's help. We're going to do more pressure on ICE, on our local delegates, our members of Congress, and working with ACLU, and we're going to also reach out to Amnesty International. And we really need everyone's help. We need people's help. So we're hoping that folks reach out to us and join really our mission to get justice for these potential victims of genocide.
Listeners, if you check eastcountymagazine.org and you check our World Watch section or our Refugee Voices section, we'll be posting updates on this story in both of those sections on the magazine. As well as any information, if there are upcoming rallies, if there are petitions people can sign, then we definitely want our listeners and our readers to know about that. I want to thank both of you for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show. Do you have any final thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners on KNSJ today?
Pray for them. Pray for these Christians in jail to be released.
Yeah, we do believe the power of prayer will lead us through this crisis. Folks could contact us on minorityhf.org through the foundation and raise your voice with our voice. And every person counts. Every person could help. And keep them in your prayers, please.
Our hearts and our prayers are certainly with you, with the families, and with the people that are detained in this facility. Thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, underwrite our radio show, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio. East County Magazine has picked up 3 more awards from the Society for Professional Journalists San Diego chapter. 2 of the awards honor coverage on our East County Magazine show on KNSJ, while the 3rd is for an investigative report at our online news site, bringing our total awards to 83 since our founding in 2008. The awards were presented to our editor and show producer, Miriam Raftery. Our honors include a radio series award for our coverage of local Iraqi Chaldean leaders speaking out to halt genocide. We also took 2nd in the radio interview category for our entry entitled, Anguish Hits Home for Local Kurdish Woman. The interview detailed how the ISIS invasion has displaced her family and caused her brother to take up arms with Peshmerga fighters against ISIS. We also took second for investigative reporting in the daily reporting category for our coverage of Soitec's failure to disclose negative impacts about a solar project proposed in Boulevard, which also revealed a conflict of interest involving a county planner turned lobbyist for Soitec. You can read all our award-winning entries in the news section at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Ed Barreno with a Green Scene Report. The San Diego City Planning Department has published a 300-page public notice of a draft environmental impact report on the city's ambitious climate action plan, which expands on Mayor Kevin Falconer's climate action plan released last year. The ambitious plan aspires to cut San Diego's greenhouse gas emissions in half and convert all energy used by the city to renewable sources by 2035. The city also aims to have half its urban residents walking, biking, or taking public transportation to work. The plan lists community choice aggregation as an option for council to consider, but does not mandate it. The public has 60 days to submit comments on the climate action plan to the city's planning department. The 4th District Court of Appeal ruled in late July that Proposition 47 sentencing reclassification provisions apply equally to children and adults. San Diego District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis had argued that juveniles are not eligible to have their past offenses reduced to misdemeanors, even though adults convicted of the same felonies may petition for such relief. Margaret Dooley Samuli, director of the ACLU of California's Criminal Justice and Drug Policy Project, criticized Dumanis for seeking, quote, the harshest punishments to the most vulnerable San Diegans, unquote, and for ignoring the will of the voters. She also said, quote, had her unsupported reading of the law been upheld, it would have given prosecutors across the state the authority to do what many would consider unthinkable, criminalize children more harshly than adults, unquote. Prop 47, a measure which passed with nearly 60% of the vote in November 2014, ended felony sentencing for 6 petty crimes, including simple drug possession and petty theft, and created a resentencing process for those certain felonies to be retroactively reclassified as misdemeanors. The ACLU argued that denying juveniles the resentencing relief provided to adults with identical offenses and denying these juveniles similar relief to that provided to juveniles charged after the initiative went into effect violates juveniles' equal protection rights under the California and U.S. constitutions. The judge ruled that a juvenile named in the case have his conviction on a felony commercial burglary charge reduced to a misdemeanor and his DNA stricken from the record. Chessie Thatcher, an attorney at Kekar and Van Ness, reacted to the decision. She said, quote, today's ruling makes the future a little brighter for many young people in San Diego. The court recognized that juveniles have the same rights as adults under Proposition 47 and may petition to have eligible felony adjudications reclassified as misdemeanors. Such relief opens up doors in education, employment, and the military and will assist those facing any future criminal or immigration proceedings, unquote. Prop 47 was passed with strong support among San Diego voters as well as statewide. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
The California Fish and Game Commission has voted 3-2 to ban bobcat trapping statewide. The decision today completely bans bobcat trapping in California with the exception of trapping bobcats that prey on livestock. The ban will become effective after approval by the State Office of Administrative Law and submission to the Secretary of State. The regulations may be effective before the start of the 2015-2016 bobcat trapping season. Commission President Jack Bylas and Commissioners Anthony Williams and Eric Sklar voted in favor of a statewide ban. Commission Vice President Jim Kellogg and Commissioner Jacqueline Hostler-Carmison voted against it. The ban follows several years of study and a finding that in 2012, the year prior to legislation that proposed the ban, 1,500 bobcats were killed for their pelts in California, fueled by high prices being paid in China for the fur. The last full study of the state's bobcat population is decades old, leading to concerns that bobcats are being depleted. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. A Republican-backed bill to stop all funding for Planned Parenthood nationwide has been blocked by Senate Democrats this week, falling 7 votes short of the 50 needed for passage. Now, the Republican leadership is threatening to shut down the government if the federal budget includes funding for Planned Parenthood, which provides birth control, mammograms, pap smears, and other women's health services in addition to abortion. Republicans introduced the bill after secretly filmed videotapes showed some Planned Parenthood staff discussing use of tissue from aborted fetuses for research. The practice of using fetal tissue for research is legal in the United States, provided that only costs are recovered, not profit. Planned Parenthood has said that it did not violate the law and that permission was obtained from the women to use their aborted fetal tissue for medical research aimed at helping to find cures and treatments for serious medical conditions. Senator Rand Paul, a Republican presidential candidate from Kentucky, led the floor debate, stating, "It's about time we said enough is enough." The videos were filmed undercover by an anti-abortion group called the Center for Medical Progress. California Attorney General Kamala Harris has opened a probe into the videographers. Since filming or recording someone without their permission is illegal in California, except for law enforcement with a warrant. In Congress, two House committees have opened investigations into Planned Parenthood, however. Planned Parenthood's president, Cecile Richards, has apologized for the at times insensitive tone of some employees in the video, but she insists that the organization acted lawfully. Over a third of the organization's funding is federal. Republicans have accused Planned Parenthood of selling body parts, although no evidence of profit has been shown. Democrats accuse Republicans of attacking women's health and note the irony of some Republicans who voted for fetal tissue research now attacking Planned Parenthood for making that tissue available to researchers. California Senator Barbara Boxer, a Democrat, says shutting off funding for Planned Parenthood would actually lead to more abortions since it would deny women a key source of birth control. Planned Parenthood runs 700 clinics and serves about 2.7 million people nationwide. With a September 30th deadline looming for the federal budget, a showdown appears likely. President Barack Obama has vowed to veto any measure that defunds Planned Parenthood. Each party is laying blame at the other for the prospect of a shutdown, but the real losers could be the American public. Last time Republicans forced a shutdown, the action shut down national parks, took some air traffic controllers off the job, left many federal workers without pay, and caused concerns for people dependent on federal checks for everything from food stamps to Social Security. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso. And we are back with our continuing coverage of the presidential race for 2016, or what we're calling the Run for the Roses, the White House Rose Garden, that is. Last week, we profiled the front runners in this race, as well as a couple of the mavericks running. And today, we're going to be talking about two Latino candidates, both of them Republicans, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. So I'm here now with Juwan Armstrong. Juwan is a San Diego State journalism major who's been working with us this summer researching these candidates. Juwan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with Marco Rubio. Tell us a little bit about his biographical background.
Marco Rubio is a U.S. Senator from Florida. He is the son of Cuban immigrants. He earned his bachelor's degree at University of Florida and received his law degree from the University of Miami.
Okay, so he's an attorney. How about Ted Cruz?
He earned his bachelor's in public policy from Princeton University, and he received his law degree from the Harvard Law School. He also worked as a law clerk to the Chief Justice of the United States, William Rehnquist. He also worked as an Associate Deputy Attorney General for the U.S. Department of Justice and Director of the Office of Policy Planning for the Federal Trade Commission.
So he's also got an impressive resume there, at least. Now, both of them on economics believe in balancing the budget like pretty much all of the Republicans do, but they have some different ideas about how to do that. Tell us about that.
Cruz's take on it is to cut corporate taxes. Rubio supports balancing the federal budget within 10 years, and he has advocated freezing spending for everything but defense. His goal is to get our spending levels to the 2008 levels.
Okay, so he wants to roll back the spending quite a bit there. How about climate change?
Both of them deny climate change.
So these are not the environmental candidates here. What about their views on same-sex marriage, hot issue lately?
Well, Marco Rubio believes that marriage is between a man and a woman, And then Cruz believes that states should define what marriage is.
Okay, so he wants to leave it to the states, states' rights. How about abortion? Now, both of these candidates, I understand, want to roll back reproductive freedoms for women to some degree, but they have some differences in just how far they would go. Tell us about that. Yes.
Rubio wants to ban abortion after 20 weeks, while Cruz wants to set abortion limits to strict levels, even for rape victims.
And for Cruz, that would be starting at conception, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's more extreme. Okay, let's get to the issue that's probably first and foremost on the minds of many Latino voters out there, people of Latino heritage, and that would be immigration reforms. Now, here there are some major differences in these candidates. Let's start with Ted Cruz. What's his view on that?
Ted Cruz wants to block any current efforts that let undocumented immigrants legally remain in the U.S.
So he just wants to deport them all, basically. Mm-hmm. Marco Rubio now, he was actually involved in the bipartisan Senate Gang of Eight a while back that was focused on creating a bill to reform immigration laws. What would that bill include and what happened with that?
The bill would have provided a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants.
And then the conservatives pushed back on that, so the bill failed to make it through the House. And later I understand that Rubio changed his position. So tell us what he thinks now.
Yeah, well, he actually backed away from the bill. He actually stated that taking a more piecemeal approach would be more practical. His decision was made after polling showed his support plunge among the Republican voters.
Okay, let's move on to controversies. We've already basically talked about the biggest controversy involving Rubio, and that was his flip-flopping on immigration reforms.
Mm-hmm.
What about Ted Cruz? What did you find out there?
Well, I found out that PolitiFact's Truthometer has checked 48 statements by Cruz as of late June and found the majority were mostly false, or pants on fire whoppers.
Pants on fire whoppers. Now, what were some of the claims that he made that he was not truthful about, according to PolitiFact, which is a nonpartisan, nonprofit group?
Well, some of the claims were made on cost of tax compliance, the rate of small businesses going under, and several false or misleading statements on health care reforms.
Very interesting. Let's move on a more positive note to some fascinating facts. What did you dig out, starting with Ted Cruz?
He was actually born in Canada, and he actually has some teaching experience. He was an adjunct law professor, and he taught the U.S. Supreme Court litigation at the University of Texas.
Very interesting. How about Marco Rubio?
He has a huge passion for football. He is a diehard Miami Dolphins fan, and his wife was once a cheerleader for the team.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And he also, according to the Washington Post, his favorite kind of music is hip-hop.
Hip-hop. That's interesting. Okay, so it's not salsa or something like that.
Mm-mm.
Let's talk a little bit about their odds of winning. Now, if you were a racehorse handicapper on this thing, what do you think some of the strengths and weaknesses of their campaigns would be, starting with Ted Cruz?
For Ted Cruz, he actually turned sharply right.
Mm-hmm.
This could actually not work in his favor because he could have difficulty appealing to centrist voters in a general election.
Good point.
However, he does have really good speaking skills. He has the appeal
to that conservative side of the aisle.
Strong
resume.
Yeah, strong resume.
There you go. Okay. Moving on to Marco Rubio. Tell us a little bit about his base of support and, where his strengths and weaknesses lie.
Well, he brought a strong support from the Tea Party, but he seemed to have shifted to a more moderate conservative position. This may help Rubio in his favor because it might attract more moderate Republicans to his campaign. But he can also gain a large amount of support from the Latino community opposed to Cruz, since he's done more for immigration reforms.
Okay, very good point. That seems to be borne out in what the Vegas odds makers are showing. What's the latest in how they're handicapping this race as of today?
Well, for Rubio, the Vegas odds are 8-1. And then for Cruz, the Vegas odds are 33-1.
So he's definitely the dark horse in this race. Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for all that excellent research, Juwan. And we appreciate you joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you for having me.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County features an evening bird walk, movies by the lake, a rocking outdoor concert, and a sip of Julian.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a cabaret-style show, the Commodores in concert, a Star Fest, and Julian's Wild and Scenic Film Festival.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more. El Cajon's popular Friday night dinner and outdoor concert on August 7th will feature the Mighty Untouchables. Bring a picnic basket or eat at one of the many restaurants in El Cajon before the show starts. The Mighty Untouchables perform around the world, entertaining audiences with everything from Motown to classic rock, along with pop and country. You can enjoy dancing at this cool, classy scene at Prescott Promenade Park Friday night, August 7th from 6 to 8 p.m. For more information, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Santee Lakes will be hosting Movies by the Lake on Friday, August 7th. You can watch the movie Maleficent, rated PG, at 6 p.m. For more details, go to santeelakes.com/special events.
Saturday, August 8th marks the first annual Sip of Julian. 8 participants are included in this event, highlighting Julian area wineries and other tasting rooms. Joining the traditional wine producers are a craft brewery, hard cider, and a meat producer. Starting at 11 a.m., visitors have 6 hours to enjoy their sips paired with locally produced appetizers. For tickets or more information, contact Julian's Chamber of Commerce at julianca.com.
Trail guides and birdwatching experts will lead a special evening bird walk at Mission Trails Regional Park on August 8th at 7 p.m. As day transitions into night, you might be treated to some nighttime birds, including owls, towards the end of the walk. Bring binoculars and sign up by calling the Visitor Center at 619-668-3281.
On Sunday, August 9th, Mission Trails Regional Park will have a San Diego Native American Flute Circle. The free concert begins at 1 p.m. and ends at 3 p.m. It will take place at the Visitors Outdoor Amphitheater. You can listen to flute players who honor Native American music in a beautiful natural setting. For more details about this event, go to mtrp.org/events. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The Commodores are coming to Sequan's Live and Up Close Theater on August 12th and 13th at 8 p.m. From Motown to the Grammy Awards, the Commodores have been a force in the music industry for more than 3 decades. For tickets, go to sequan.com.
Lamplighters Community Theater continues its 78th season with the supporting cast, a comedy to be staged August 14th through September 13th. When Ellen, the wife of a successful author, writes a sizzling novel, her friends are thrilled until she invites them to her Malibu beach house and reveals that they are the characters. For tickets, visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
Monterath Powell Productions presents the premiere of a new girl group, Tres, at the Visionary Performance Space on August 14th at 7 p.m. That's on 7202 El Cajon Boulevard in San Diego. This cabaret-style production features 3 powerhouse vocalists, Nicole Isabel, Calliope Marin, and Sophia Rogers. Listen to these young divas as they sing some of today's and yesterday's popular hits by artists such as Adele, Beyoncé, Tina Turner, and more. And also enjoy food, drinks, and music, along with the premiere of Tres. For tickets and details, visit visionarydancetheater.org.
Julian hosts its annual Starfest in mid-August with a public Starfest party on August 15th at the Mangini Winery from 7 to 10 p.m. Telescopes and astronomy experts will be on hand. Bring a red flashlight or flashlight with red tape over it. Please, no white lights in the viewing area to distract from your astronomical viewing pleasure.
Thursday, August 13th, the Barona Cultural Center and Museum will present Kumeyaay on the Coast from 6 to 8 p.m. Richard Carrico teaches at SDSU and is the author of Strangers in a Stolen Land. Mr. Carrico has focused his research on the overlooked aspects of Native Kumeyaay life, fishing, and maritime activities, including boat making and deep water fishing. The Kumeyaay lived along the ocean and part-time in the mountains and foothills. Mr. Karika will peel back history 3,000 years for a glimpse into life as an original native ancestor of San Diego. The Barona Community Center is adjacent to the Barona Museum on Wildcat Canyon Road, about 1 mile past the casino. Admission is free to the public.
The 4th Annual Julian Film Festival showcased environmental movies by up-and-coming filmmakers on August 21st and 22nd. This year's theme, A Watershed Year, focuses on the Vulcan Mountain Range and related waterways in the San Diego County and Baja. All proceeds benefit the Vulcan Mountain Foundation's preservation efforts. For tickets and details, visit vulcanmount.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Wildfires are burning throughout the state, and things will only get worse before they get better, says Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, a columnist at East County Magazine. If by chance you are near a wildfire, you may be asked to evacuate. There are some things you should know if you find yourself in that situation. When should you leave? It is wise to leave the area as soon as an evacuation is recommended. This will help you avoid being caught in a fire, smoke, or traffic. This will also help firefighters keep roads clear, which allows them to work without obstacles. Where should you go? Call your friends or family who live outside the threatened area and see if they can offer you a space to stay during the evacuation. Your local fire department or city officials will also have designated evacuation shelters. What should you take? Prepare an emergency kit well before a fire strikes. This kit should include things like a first aid kit, a 3-day supply of non-perishable food, and 3 gallons of water per person, spare keys and cash, and medication. If time allows, then you should pack easily carried valuables, chargers for your cell phone and laptops, and anything irreplaceable such as family photos. What about your pets? Ask friends and family if they can shelter your animals during an emergency. Keep a list of 24-hour numbers for pet-friendly places such as animal shelters, pet boarding facilities, and veterinarians. Be sure to have an animal carrier, food, and water for each pet if you need to evacuate quickly. What should you wear? If you need to go outside while there is an active fire nearby, put on some protective clothing like sturdy shoes, cotton, or woolen clothes, since synthetic fibers can melt, long pants, a long-sleeved shirt, and gloves. For more information, you can visit readyforwildfire.org/evacuation. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
An expansion approved by San Diego State University has been flunked by the state Supreme Court. That's because CSU trustees failed to fund mitigation of traffic impacts on neighborhoods near campus or Interstate 8 during the expansion. The expansion plans aim to accommodate increased enrollment, including student housing for 3,400 residents, a 348-unit housing complex for faculty and staff, a new classroom complex, a hotel, conference center, parking, and more. CSU is mandated by the state to add 10,000 new full-time students and 1,300 more faculty and staff by the 2024 and 25 academic year, Times of San Diego reports. The City of San Diego, the Metropolitan Transit System, and the San Diego Association of Governments filed suit arguing that CSU's trustees erred in approving an environmental document that lacked funding for roadway upgrades. City Attorney Jan Goldsmith praised the decision to treat the state college system the same as any other developer. But Fram Virgi, Executive Vice Chancellor and General Counsel for CSU, called it disappointing and said CSU will now need to seek additional money to cover mitigation costs. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, August 7th, 2015. I'm Troy Wild. We're covering stories from coast to coast, including Amazon and Walmart are among several retailers that will stop selling realistic-looking toy guns as part of a settlement with New York's Attorney General. We'll report on changes in Ferguson, Missouri, 1 year after Michael Brown was fatally shot by police officer Darren Wilson. And we report on a program that is helping veterans in Michigan start their own businesses. And now our top story. Five retailers, including Amazon and Walmart, have agreed this week to stop selling realistic-looking toy guns. Nia Hamm reports on reaction to the settlement.
In a settlement agreement with New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, the companies will pay more than $300,000 for violating public safety laws. Leah Gunn Barrett, executive director of New Yorkers Against Gun Violence, says the crackdown should help decrease preventable gun deaths.
And send a message and provide an example to other states across the country to follow New York's lead.
New York City law requires guns to be entirely brightly colored, while state law mandates markings along the sides and tip of the toy gun.
Nia tells us there has been a push to regulate toy guns since 12-year-old Tamir Rice was fatally shot by a Cleveland police officer last November while he was holding a toy gun. The cameras have stopped rolling and the national news crews have gone home, but in the year since the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, grassroots programs have been driving change in the city, a suburb of St. Louis. Joshua Salim heads the Peace Education Program run by the American Friends Service Committee. He says in the past year, the group has offered three freedom schools in the St. Louis area, workshops where young people meet to talk openly about poverty, race, and oppression, and strategies for involvement.
To shift their understanding of racism from an individual kind of I hate you kind of mindset to a perspective of racism that involves how systems and institutions operate and deal with and interact with people of color in this country.
While Salim says there is still much work to be done, he notes that since the protests over Brown's death last August at the hands of Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson, the Department of Justice has released four separate reports detailing racially discriminatory and exploitive policing, officer misconduct, and mismanagement. Ferguson also has a new interim police chief, and the city council has since diversified. A bill to allow New York workers up to 12 weeks of paid family leave is gaining support in Albany. This week, Netflix announced it will give its employees unlimited time off for the first year after a child is born or adopted. It's a growing trend in major corporations. A New York bill that would also allow paid leave to care for an aging parent or sick family member stalled in the Senate this year. But Jared Make, senior staff attorney, had a better balance as the future prospects are looking good.
We're ready to hit the ground running once the new session kicks off. And I think all of the national attention and momentum for paid family leave is certainly helpful for getting something done here in New York as well.
The U.S. is one of the few countries in the world that doesn't have at least national paid maternity leave. Paid family leave has been a law in California for a decade and in New Jersey since 2009. We head to New Hampshire, where biologists, sportsmen, and conservationists all are giving the thumbs up to the EPA's Clean Power Plan announced by President Obama earlier this week. Mike Clifford has our story.
Art Green is a New Hampshire sportsman and volunteer coordinator for Trout Unlimited. He says climate change is a global problem, so the plan's goal of reducing power plant carbon emissions by 32% by the year 2030 is of vital importance.
Power plants in the U.S. are a major contributor to global warming, and we absolutely have to face the future and what we can do to improve things.
Green says warming waters are threatening brook trout, which have been native to local waters for thousands of years and are a prime draw for sports tourism. Warmer waters are also being blamed for the disappearance of northern shrimp off the coast of Seabrook.
Mike tells us that the EPA plan is expected to face court challenges by some power companies and states that contend the regulations will be too costly and hurt local economies. We head to Michigan, where a growing number of veterans are starting their own businesses, thanks in part to an agency that helps guide vets through the startup process. Matt Sherwood is executive director of Vet Biz Central, an agency which helps veterans put together and refine business plans and ideas. He says while starting any business can be risky, veterans have a skill set that lends itself well to entrepreneurial ventures.
Most veteran businesses tend to hire other veterans, so it's a real big economic impact for veterans to start, create, expand their businesses, and hire veterans.
Sherwood says statistics show veteran-owned franchises actually are twice as likely to succeed as non-veteran ones. Right now, Michigan has about 65,000 veteran-owned businesses. We head to New Mexico, where farmers' markets are reporting big success with a program that provides extra food to people receiving benefits through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also called SNAP and formerly known as food stamps. The news is timely with this being National Farmers Market Week. Paulo Spearn with the Santa Fe Farmers Market says the program provides a 2-to-1 match for people using their SNAP benefits to buy food at farmers' markets.
We're just seeing our SNAP participation go through the roof. So over the past 2 months, $40,000 of SNAP money has gone from low-income families, getting them fresh, healthy produce, into the pockets of our growers.
Spearn says the state is providing $400,000 to fund the SNAP program, now in place at about 35 farmers markets around the state. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is reporting a 64% increase in traffic at farmers markets that have been open for at least 2 years. The USDA also says that the growing popularity of farmers markets is helping to sustain farmers and rural communities. I'm Troy Wild for Public News Service, member and listener-supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine. According to law enforcement, James DiMaggio kidnapped Lakeside teen Hannah Anderson after first torturing and murdering her mother and brother, then setting fire to his house and boulevard with their bodies inside. The crime triggered a multi-state manhunt that ended when FBI agents killed DiMaggio in the Idaho wilderness where he had taken Anderson. But now DiMaggio's sister, Laura DiMaggio Robinson, has filed a claim with the FBI and also plans to file a lawsuit in Idaho federal court next week, 10 News reports. She seeks over $20 million in damages from the FBI for wrongful death, personal injury, and property damage. Her lawyer, C. Keith Greer, told NBC 7 TV that Robinson knows that her brother was a very kind man, certainly not one to shoot at an FBI agent. Anderson has stated in prior media interviews that she was abducted against her will and threatened with harm if she attempted to flee her captor, though DiMaggio's sister has voiced doubts about Anderson's story. Anderson told NBC's Today Show that DiMaggio tried to build a fire to signal for help. Greer contends that DiMaggio fired his rifle to signal for help, even though he was on the run from the law. The claim argues that the FBI should have asked DiMaggio to drop his weapon before agents opened fire. The FBI told 10 News that the FBI and the U.S. Department of Justice will review the claim and will respond in the appropriate manner to the parties involved. No further comments will be made at this time regarding the filing of the claim. The FBI's use of force policy allows lethal force if an agent believes a suspect poses an imminent threat to the agent or to another person, such as Anderson in this case.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.